หริโภสหนาวัตุสหนาภุนัตตุสหวิรยัมคารวาวะไหเตยัสวินาวะนิตามัสตุมาเวนเวชาวะไหOm Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare HareHare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so if you like, yes, why not? Yeah, it's harder today, isn't it?
Yeah.
It started yesterday. Is it on regular or is it on...
On the highest.
Yeah, yeah, no, over there it is, but it works by this thing. No, but it's good. Okay. Because sometimes they, you know, the boys put it on full blast and lay on the floor. Okay. So on page 8.So now we've given the vishayas that the scriptures can teach you and get rid of ignorance, right? So the root cause of material existence, and only by obtaining favorable disposition towards the Lord. So an intelligent person being enlightened by the mercy of a qualified guru should fully worship the Lord through the process of pure bhakti, devoid of other desires, devoid of karma and jnana, right? Then the doubt that comes up. Then the shamshaya and purvapaksha.Scriptures also recommend other processes for realizing the absolute truth, right? So that's the Shamshaya, right? And the Purvapaksha. There are many sections of the Vedas dedicated to the processes of Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda. Then why only worship the Lord is recommended, right? So you see, the Shamshaya is the doubt, so you can say it in that one sentence, and then their explanation, you know, in other words, what would be our Hetu, our reason, that's the their Purvapaksha.Does that make sense? Yes, so in other words, be sweet and be happy. That makes sense?
Yeah. I'm still trying to match because I started reading logic. So it will find its own place.
Yeah.
Because it's more detailed now.
Because it means you have the Panchanga Nyaya.
Yeah.
Right? Or you have the Pratigya, right, which is the statement.
Yeah.
Right? Then you have the Hetu, which is then the reason for the statement.
Yeah.
Then you have the Udaharana, which is the explanation of the statement. Right? Then you have the... then that clears any doubts and everything like that. That brings it to the...
Upanaya.
Which means bringing near means now the person is starting to catch what you say, but they haven't quite put it together. And then you have the...
Nigamana,
which means now you're giving the conclusion.With this practical kind of direction. So, then, that is the form of logical progression. That's just the form. Now, in that form, because let's say you're teaching, so then in that teaching, then you're going to, you know, clear any doubts and all that that's there, because there's standard doubts. And so then, that will be done through that, the Udaharana.Right, the third stage, where then you're going to explain things, give more elaborate, more details, give examples that make it clear, and everything like that. Does that make sense? And so basically you're clearing everything there. Now, someone has a doubt, then just that question, then you're going to clear, you're going to continue that Udaharana process. In other words,If there's no doubts, you've just explained it, it goes to the five just as it is. If there's doubts, there's more time spent in the Udaharana to clear. Otherwise, the beginning two, the last two are going to stay the same. The fourth one's going to have the variation according to doubts that are there, but otherwise it's going to be the same. Right? Now, so that's what's going on. Now when you identify, okay, means they have doubts. So it's not just, you know, a lighter thing that just goes in the discussion, but they have doubts, and so there's a dialogue there going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so that dialogue, that's not necessarily the submissive inquiry, because that will be taken care of by the Panchanga Nyaya. Fine. So when there's doubts, so that it turns into more of a discussion, like vada, yes?
Tarka, that's fine, the logic. After Avyaya's five components, then the tarka is mentioned. So tarka is that argumentation or discussion where you now analyze what is invalid and what is valid knowledge, and you separate them. And then you come to conclusion, then it is called nirnaya. So basically, when it is explaining the nirnaya, there it is explained by Vatsya and Rishi that without tarka also you can come to conclusion based on the scriptures, because scriptures are independent, and also by direct perception.
Mm.
So in one sense then, you know, what is mentioned here is after the tarka and everything else, that's right, is in this format of...
Mm. In other words, when you're applying the logic, the Panchanga Nyaya is the body on which it is applied. Mm. In that the praman, the prameyas, the this, the that, all that's there. So it's the form.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now when you're dealing with they have a doubt and all that, when you put it into that context, then our pratigya and our hetu, that will be called the vishaya. You know, like that, basically.
Yeah.
Or, you know, can just be the pratigya or like that. Then their doubt, you know, which is their pratigya, is the shamshaya.
Mm-hmm.
And then their purvapaksha is their explanation, and then, in other words, them, their reasoning, and even they're trying to give their udaharan and everything like that. And then when we counter that, that's uttara, because you don't have to have another thing, because we already have what we've said. Right? And then that can go back and forth. So I've given my uttara. He may have a further doubt, or his doubt remains the same. He has a further purvapaksha. And that keeps going until it's been cleared. And so when it's cleared, that means then you've brought it to the point of the upanaya and the nirnaya. Nirnaya? No.
Yeah.
Upanaya and nirnaya.
No, nigama.
Nigama. And that is called siddhanta.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? That whole... Because when it goes into that, then that whole, you have to use more of the technical processes, and you have to be aware of more of the technical processes. Because the tarka, as he says, because tarka is that is hypothetical. You know, this is here, it's got a tripod. You know, I always saw in the magazines on my grandmother's coffee table that UFOs have three feet, right? They always have three, right? Why, I don't know, but they always have three. You know, Mickey Mouse has three fingers, you know, so it's like that. No, he's got a thumb, so I mean, he can count four, but whatever. So, is this a UFO? And so then you start to analyze it, how it could be a UFO or how it wouldn't be a UFO. Is that, you know, maybe it's not a UFO, it would be a URO. Right? An unidentified recording object.
Okay.
You know, so then you go through that, and then you're giving your reasons why it's not, and they're giving their reasons why it is. So basically you have to adjust your approach to clear their doubt. Otherwise you wouldn't have gone into all that, because it's not something that's actually, how you say, necessary to the discussion. But if there's a doubt because of someone's experience or perception or like that, then it's worthwhile dealing with, as long as they do have a shamshaya and there is some clarity. If they're just arguing, if they're just trying to, you know, just emotions and feelings, and they want to experience and, you know, be the center and all that, then that's not actually part of the process. That, then that would be nigrahastana. So there's no basis of discussion. Because nigrahastana means the point of defeat, means they don't have anything to say, so it's not worth discussing. It's not that you defeated them in the argument. It's just that there's no grounds for a discussion. Does that make sense? So, because I'm going out of my way to deal with it, that going out of the way then uses the Vishaya, Samshaya, Purva Paksha, Uttara, Siddhanta. Does that make sense? If you weren't going out of your way, you just call it by the natural, the normal names. Mm-hmm. But it's still working on the same principle. Does that make sense? Because you're presenting it logically and all that. You want to avoid the faults, but then also when they start the process, then you have to see that there's no faults used there. They're using the proper process. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the two are the same thing. It's just whether you're focusing on does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
So in order for the discussion to happen, the minimum is both sides have to know some philosophy and they have to apply some logic. Otherwise it's not happening.
Yeah, or at least they have to be open to the idea of it. Hmm. Because it's like you have that discussion with what was his name? Just know it's Bob Cohen.
Bob Cohen. Oh yeah. Brahmatirtha.
Yeah, Brahmatirtha. So and when they were at the Bhajan Kutir, because this would have been early, I think it was maybe, might have been 73. I don't think the other buildings were up yet. And so then he sat with Srila Prabhupada, and that discussion was recorded, mm-hmm. and that became a book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. Because it's not. Means you have a doubt, but it's a doubt you just don't understand how it's applied. So that's just a natural part of the process. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so that you don't necessarily have to put into this terminology, but you could. Because he has a doubt, and so his doubt is, you know, this, and because of these reasons, but it's not, doesn't have to be an argument.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a submissive inquiry. But the point is you're still dealing with that. So basically you can say the Samshaya Purva Paksha Uttara, these are all what you would be using within the whole discussion of the Udaharana, the third stage. Like that. That would just be a furtherance of that. Because the end means your opening and your closing are going to be basically the same. At least your opening is always the same. Like this. Means if you know the audience has this particular mentality, you might adjust the wording, how you use it, you know, like that, and be careful with that. And because of that, you give your particular examples. And so only then the Upanaya... No, Upanaya? Yeah, Upanaya would have that adjustment that is coming back into it from the angle of...
Udaharana.
Of the Udaharana of that person who has the Samshaya and Purva Paksha, mm-hmm. who has the doubts. So you want to bring that. Then you bring it back to where you normally would have if you were just giving a presentation. In other words, the Pancharanga Nyaya is if you were giving a presentation. You know, and you can clear some questions and all. But if it turns into a serious discussion on doubts and argument, then you use these terminologies. So, since the whole point in Vedanta Sutra, they're just clearing these anarthas and all that, therefore these terminologies are used. But it's still the same Panchanga Nyaya. Does that make sense? Yes.
Regarding the terminology, didn't we say that this one is Gautamas?
Yes.
It's
made into that. It's just Vyasadeva is using those terminologies and that to bring out the arguments that are going on with the other six schools of philosophy and the Buddhist and anything else. In other words, he's clearing philosophy. So it's not that it's not Gautama, it's just that this is the form that he's using. Yes?
Because the Mimamsa Sutra, Jaimini also uses
these. Jaimini uses these
also. No, my point was that we just differentiated before just the terms.
Yes, but it's not exactly. means these would be the things that are there. What we're saying is these would be fine points within there. So it's that in your standard thing, you don't have to bring that out, but if there's some difficulty, you bring that out. But it's not that it's a different system. This is generally what comes up from those trying to study it and they can't figure out what's going on, so we'll say it's two different systems, when it's actually one system. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, you know, how do you say, you go out, you've ordered a vehicle to take you to Calcutta, right? When you go out the house, you know, to get in the vehicle, you find out you're going to Calcutta. You find out it's one of these local Krishnagar ambassadors, right? So then you'll say this is not a car. I ordered a car. He says, no, this is a car. No, this is not a car. And then you start to explain what a car is. You know what I'm saying? So then you're getting into these different arguments and all that. You know what I'm saying? It's still a vehicle, but you've named it that, or you don't say, this isn't a car, this is garbage, or this is trash, or this is, you know, something like this. And so you're using different terminologies to bring out the point that there's a doubt. It's just, in other words, it's using terminologies that address that there's a doubt. But it doesn't have to be something else. Does that make sense? Let us say, also, you're with your friends. You know, or your friends, and it means you've just met them, they haven't met, and then you say, then you meet, and you say, oh, I'd like to introduce my wife. Right? This is your friends. But now let's say you're out in a more urban kind of environment, or more metro environment like that, so you don't say, this is my wife, oh, who's this? You know, this is my partner. It means exactly the same thing, but for those who have particular mentality, they don't want to put it into the, what do you call it, the bi, what's that, bi, what's that term they use? Binary, you know, one or zero, that is man or woman. That is man or woman, so you don't say husband and wife, you know, like that. So therefore you say my partner. Someone a few years ago told me that's the safest. You just ask about their partner, because then you don't have to worry, you know, which of the eighty, you know, genders and categories they are. One's a pumpkin and one's a unicorn or something. You don't have to worry about it. You know, so it's the same thing, but it takes into consideration the other's mentality. So in other words, the presentation is the Panchanganyaya. You're taking into consideration the other person's mentality, that takes on this Vishaya Shamshaya Purvapaksha Uttara Siddhanta. Does that make sense? So that's all. So when you see Vishaya Shamshaya, then you know there's an argument. That's all. It's just those are the terminologies for that. So since Vedanta Sutra is there to establish the Vedanta philosophy over all the other schools, therefore it uses that terminology. So, does that work? Okay. Okay, Uttara, Shankhya, Astanga Yoga, and Karma are classed as being favorable because they produce realization of the form of Brahman and are thus suitable for gradual development of realization of the Lord. Karma is a cause of bhakti, because it is a form of following the Lord's order and involves offering to the Lord. Right? So it doesn't mean cause of bhakti meaning that it's a cause meaning it's the cause of bhakti, but it's a cause that brings in your mentality closer to bhakti, so you tend to surrender to bhakti. So it's a secondary aspect that's favorable to bhakti. Right? Jnana is an attendant to bhakti by causing detachment to material nations, objects. Yeah, this cause, the one in here, karma is a cause of bhakti. Is it, could some other word be used?
Maybe because it
Oh, so this is the translation. Okay. But you just have to be clear on your cause and your system. There's a
maybe they're thinking that there's a favorable thing.
Yeah, that's what it means. It means like that. It's a favorable thing. But it's not actually the cause of bhakti. Bhakti is independent. But it is cause meaning you perform these things. It means that the process of bhakti is said if you use these secondary forms in connection with bhakti, then that is, well, you can say that's a cause of bhakti, because the cause actually comes from bhakti itself.
Maybe they want to say that it leads to bhakti?
Yeah, it leads to. I mean, that's what is there, but it's like, because we're looking cause and effect, I did an activity, I get an effect. So I did the activity of engaging karma in the Lord's service according to bhakti, therefore the effect is then advancing in devotional service. Somebody says? It's just a matter, you can use it like that, but you just have to be careful that then you don't want people to get the idea that karma causes bhakti. So, because otherwise that will be, for those involved in karma, that's what they think. They think it's by proper, good karma, then you get bhakti. Right? You know, so it even says after many lifetimes of pious activities, but those pious activities are activities in connection with bhakti, not giving you charity or this and that. Otherwise, that's not. Though karma and jnana are favorable, it is recommended that one should worship by direct bhakti, consisting of hearing and chanting about the Lord, because bhakti is the only independent path, while other processes are dependent on bhakti. Right, so it's independent. These others, they only work in their connection with bhakti. If you don't use them in connection with bhakti, they don't work. Even for the karmas. Just that their bhakti is not directed at anything more than at Krishna's energies. Or at Brahma. Right? And so then they want the result and they apply it as long as it gets the result. When the result's gained, then they stop. The supreme dharma for all human beings is that by which prema bhakti to the Lord arises, which is not caused by anything other than itself, cannot be obstructed, and which satisfies the mind completely. And so bhakti can't be obstructed. See, there'll be favorable situations, but we always have to see as those favorable situations, those are secondary. Those address our conditioning. So because of the conditioning, then those situations are favorable for us. Right? Otherwise, you see like Prahlad Maharaj, which, you know, didn't necessarily have any ideal situation. Right? And he's in a demon family, going to a demon school with demon teachers, demon students, you know, and then his father is on top of that, putting a few other obstacles like stomping elephants, you know, poisonous snakes, boiling oil, you know, being tossed off a cliff. But you can still chant and remember Krishna while you're falling off the cliff. So it's unobstructed. And it satisfies the mind completely, because that's actually the nature of the soul. So with that, then you see is that previously before when it says karma is a cause of bhakti, that means karma, bhakti applied through the medium of karma. In other words, the activities of devotional service is bringing about that devotional mentality. So, Purvapaksha. So now, again, they have a... They made their shamshaya, which is that, no, but other things are recommended. Right? So now, further Purvapaksha. The goal of dharma is material objects. The result of these objects is fulfillment of desire, and the result of fulfillment of desire is pleasure of the senses. That pleasure gives rise to more acts of dharma. Therefore, you cannot say that bhakti is the highest dharma. Uttara. The knowers of truth do not consider that the goal of real dharma is for producing material results, artaya. Rather, it is inquiring about the truth only, tattva jigyasa. Knowledge of this truth, which is a secondary result of bhakti, is the highest result of karma. Because, right? In other words, by karma, it naturally will bring you to jnana. Right? It's just, that will work like that. And you keep going back. You go from karma to jnana, and then it'll, you know, go back down the cycle again. Does that make sense? So then, the karma to jnana, you go up to liberation, you fall from there, you fall back into the karma, then you go down to artha and kama. And I guess the karma, then you free God again, you go back to using karma for jnana, and then situate in jnana, so you just keep making that cycle. So, by bhakti in the form of prema, the cultivation of having a taste for topics of the Lord, the devotee sees this truth in his pure consciousness, Atmani. But to speak of knowing it, they directly perceive or realize it. Therefore, one should only perform bhakti, disregarding the processes, or the process of karma and jnana. Processes. Process? Yeah, I guess you could say process. Just the English is so weird. It's very, just, they say, laissez-faire. And, just kind of like, whatever you like. Purva Paksha, again. That. But the scriptures say that one should not give up performance of one's duty prescribed according to one's varna ashram. So why do you say that we should only perform bhakti, right? Because the devotees will say this. They don't make it as they're not doubting bhakti. And here the doubt is, no, bhakti is karma, but they will doubt that when you say, just perform devotional service, but they'll say, no, but without performing my, you know, then they talk about duties. Oh, you know, you're taking care of the family, going to work, maintaining and all this. Then they start talking about glorious dharma, like that. Or some just say, you know, if I don't have a job, then they don't see is that those are activities that you connect to the Lord. You know, they're not seeing that. You know, it's just like you say, only take prasadam. Does that mean you don't pick it up, put it in your mouth, chew and swallow? Because picking it up, that's not directly eating. It's supportive of eating. You know, because you can pick up so many things. Huh? Because it's not, it means you can pick it up, you could drop it. You know, is it? But it's that saying, many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. Never heard that one? When you pick up your drink, that it's not all the time that the cup gets to the lip and what's in the cup gets into the mouth. So in this way, slip means a mistake. You know? And twixt means between. So then, you know, you pour it on yourself, or, you know, something happens, someone says something, or you pick it up funny, it spills, or, you know, different things like that.
So, in Russian we have similar, but
yeah,
just probably more poetic. Means it's all over your face, on the beard and on the mustache, but nothing is inside your mouth.
Yes. It's like the sauces from falafel.
Well, that was about the drink, drinking honey.
Okay.
The Russian saying about drinking honey, and
not only honey,
but honey is a nice example.
Italy, yeah.
Honey,
and they're not into mead, right?
Into?
Russia's not into mead.
Mead.
Mead, M-E-A-D. When you take honey and ferment it.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
To a drink.
Oh, yeah.
Means all over? North, or that was more of a south kind of thing?
East, far east, north.
Okay, just wherever there was more village. Yeah.
But they are talking about honey because that proverb they use in the fairy tales for kids.
Okay. So the kids
it's
learn
more like
to understand
it's
the.
More mild
word. Yeah, it's a light.
Okay, so that's the Rasputin's tales, or something like Tolstoy's tales.
No, the older ones, like the folk.
Yeah, folklore. It's like Aesop's fables.
So because
folklore.
They always ended like this.
Yeah. There's also a certain system. You begin with a certain wording, then there's a progression,
right.
And you have to end with certain things, so it's a pattern, which is really nice because it's a deep impression.
Yeah, because you always know.
Yeah. pictures they put in the book thing, it should be also certain.
Okay, yeah. So you have that monster bear and that little dinky girl.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay.
I also was thinking, Maharaj, that you mentioned that devotees, they don't doubt bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Generally speaking, they don't...
True.
They may be doubting, but they don't know they're doubting.
Exactly. So I was thinking when we discuss different topics, not necessarily during the class, but, you know, as a friend's talk, mm-hmm. they don't doubt bhakti. But they doubt independent nature of the bhakti.
Yes,
and it's very common.
Yes, yes. Well, that was what was given before.
Yeah.
It's when we say it's independent. They said, no, it's dependent on karma.
Yeah, and then, without understanding themselves, they give arguments. Then you have to be properly situated. Then you can perform bhakti. Or, you know, certain karmas, they give you the results of bhakti. Or knowledge. Without knowledge, you can't do.
Yes.
So, those are subtle things,
yeah,
but people don't even understand what it is. It's an anartha.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if you ask them independent nature, oh yeah, of course, it's independent.
Yeah, yeah. But as long as it doesn't have a samskara in their own application. So then, when they're applying there, is they're taking it, the principle, but bringing it down to the lower material level, the secondary level. Because when you say dharma, we're saying dharma, that means sub-dharma, or pure bhakti. Then when we're saying otherwise, dharma means the dharma of everything else, but it's still Krishna's creation. So that means everything has come from Krishna. It will therefore carry that nature of Krishna in it. So therefore, its dharma is according to Krishna, and its dharma is there to be engaged in Krishna's service. So even though it's secondary, it's still meant to support sub-dharma.
Yeah.
But they're taking it that this is independent. In other words, bhakti is not independent, but my activities and my understanding are independent. My dealing with the material world is, and bhakti depends upon how I do that.
Yeah.
So then when they say properly situated means, okay, you know, you're married, you have your house, you have your job, you have money, you know, things like that, you have your friends, and then you're properly situated. But that's your condition. Nature is properly situated. Properly situated means you're hearing from Guru, you know, as he mentioned here. It means this one. Scriptures teach that one can get rid of ignorance, which is the root cause of material existence, only by attaining favorable disposition towards the Lord. So an intelligent person being enlightened by the mercy of a qualified Guru should fully worship the Lord through the process of pure bhakti, devoid of other desires, karma, and beyond. That is properly situated. So that's the thing that throws people off, because that also is then that point that's given in, you know, Arjuna has that doubt, well, what happens to the devotee who doesn't perfect devotional service? But it's devotional service is the power that's there. The situation is secondary, or you take it further into that if someone makes a mistake. But there's still, Krishna says they're still saintly because they're properly situated. This is properly situated. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's theirs. Like you might have somebody they're not chanting or something, but they still keep the association of devotees. They still try, you know, they still have that faith, but they're not like that. So they're still properly situated. They're still saintly because they have faith in the process. They're still, but they're not themselves practicing so well. So in that way, you can say is they're not. How you say their application isn't strong. You know, but by that association and determination, it becomes strong. Does that make sense? You know, that. So that aspect is there, and they think it's, no, it's only because I'm doing my material activities, you know, that I feel are important, then bhakti is able to prosper. That's only because your consciousness is attached to those things. But it's only because bhaktis are connected to it that they give you that effect. Otherwise, if that itself was the producing bhakti, this would be a point you can make, is if that had produced, then the guys who are working really hard, wouldn't they be all devotees? You know? All those entrepreneurs who work so hard, put in 12 hours, 16 hours a day, they would be great devotees because they're performing their duties, and it's the cause of bhakti, so therefore they would become great devotees. But they're not, so therefore it only creates bhakti when it's connected to bhakti. It's favorable to bhakti when it's connected to bhakti. So that's where the point lies. It descends. It doesn't ascend. We may be ascending, but that's because we're using the descending process. The ascending process can't get us to ascend. Because if you count up to Brahman, that's, you don't really call that, that you ascended. Because how far is that? It's still within the material world. That would be like saying the prisoner is so advanced, he's next to the wall, you know, that on the other side of that wall, you know, a 30 centimeter wall, he's 30 centimeters away from freedom. He's so so close. But those other ones that are, in the yard in the middle of the prison like that, then they're the farthest away. So, and they're just engaged in, just ordinary activities of, playing basketball or something like that. But he's, leaning against the wall watching. But he's the most advanced because he's 30 centimeters from freedom. But the point is, getting up to Brahman realization, you're still in Brahman within the Mahatattva. Because you still have the consciousness under control and enjoy it. So how can you go beyond Mahatattva? So only by pure bhakti that you can get there. And so that pure bhakti then descending down into your activities, that's the whole point, is that Hokshinja means that the Lord is transcendental to all these things because he's the controller of these things. But then it will descend down into the Jnanamoya platform, the Manomoya platform, if you see its connection. If you don't see it, it doesn't descend. So that way, then you can engage that, and that will help you become liberated. You'll become freed from the material contamination. But because you're doing it to please Krishna, that will take you beyond that. That will take you to the realm of then Anandamaya, where it's about pleasing Krishna. So, yeah. But yes, what we can see is subtly here, devotees are making the same mistakes because material concepts means it's the same mistakes. It's not something new. It's the same old things. It's just that whether they are very rabidly convinced of these things and it's their identity, then they take on these very strong positions of, these philosophers and all these, does that make sense? People have a whole philosophy. That. So you find something just they didn't catch, and then you explain it to them, and then their situation doesn't change. In other words, they change the consciousness, their position of whatever it is they're doing, and their family and money and this and that doesn't change if they get the right consciousness and understanding. It stays the same. They still have the same family and all. It's not that as you're sitting there, and you're chanting and you're sitting in your house, your family and everything like that, and like that, and you're chanting and all that, and then as you get absorbed in Krishna and all that, you elevate up to another platform. When you open your eyes, there's no family there. You're just sitting in, Vrindavan or something like that, or Manishanya in the forest, and like that. They're all gone. It's just like that. And then I'm advanced, yeah, like that. And, So, it stays the same. You're still doing the same activities, the same situation. It's just the consciousness changes, now it's more dynamic. So now your advancement will be quicker because now you're seeing the karma in connection with bhakti. Therefore, it will bring you closer to Krishna. That process, that karma yoga. So karma won't, it's only when it's connected. Karma yoga will bring you closer. Or jnana yoga will bring you closer. The karma won't. Right? Okay, it's Purva Paksha. But the scriptures, we already did that. Okay. Uttara. We do not disregard any social division, but we say that everyone must work for the satisfaction of Krishna. Some sit here, Haritoshanam, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13. Then every member of society can achieve perfection. It doesn't matter what you do, but if you can satisfy Krishna by your work, your life is perfect. Otherwise, all our work is useless. Shrama eva hi kevalam, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.8. Okay, so this is all dealing with the beginning of Bhagavatam, that second chapter. Yeah, that really establishes the position of pure bhakti. Therefore, with mind dedicated only to bhakti, devoid of karma and jnana, one should constantly hear about, glorify, and meditate upon the Supreme Lord, the Master of the devotees, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.14. Purvapaksha. Why not practice karma and jnana to purify oneself from misgivings and then focus on bhakti later? Like, because that's a standard, you know, thing in India is that, you know. Or some will say, well, yeah, but I got to be practical, this is what I can do now, or this or that. Though they're doing bhakti, but they're just not focusing on it as much. They're focusing on whatever else they're doing. And because of that weakness in seeing how their activities connect to Krishna, then they don't understand is that technically, because at the end of the day, they've gone and worked, and then they buy bhoga and they cook and they offer it to Krishna. You know, the family's there, but at some point in their life they'll go to the temple. So in one sense, the results of this karma are being offered to Krishna, though they may not be as directly considered as could be. Does that make sense? Because what they're doing, the activities, they're thinking about Krishna, but they're not necessarily connecting that all this work is just so that we're in good physical and mental shape to be able to practice bhakti by going to the temple or things like that. Does that make sense? No. So they're not catching that. So it will be slower than if they see that this is being done for Krishna and here's the final result. Right? Then it becomes that some sit here, haditoshanam. Uttara. By the sword of remembrance of the Lord, cultivated by regular attendance to Bhagavatam, one can easily cut the knot of karma and ahankara, which binds one to various bodies. Even though impurities are not completely destroyed, nashta prayeshu, bhakti can be performed steadily. In the process of jnana, however, steady performance requires complete destruction of impurities. Right? He's saying, so but if we do the karma and jnana, then go to bhakti. But the problem is it means that the activities of karma then can be performed in relation to remembrance of the Lord. You remember the Lord, then you perform your activities, you'll advance and remove the anarthas. Even though they're not fully removed, you're still able to perform bhakti. But jnana, until all the anarthas are removed, you can't actually move forward. You can't perform. Jnana can't be performed unless you're fully renounced. You know, that was why these are dealing on the material platform where Shankaracharya said, first take sannyas, then we'll talk. Because until you come to that platform of situated on the jnana platform, you can't move forward. Right? So then, if the karma will get you to jnana, but unless you're completely purified, then you can't be situated there. So it'll be a difficulty, a big difficulty. Well, bhakti can't be performed at the point of karma. That will naturally bring you to be situated in jnana. But at the same time, bhakti is already going on and it will take you past. Because it will give you a greater results than karma jnana ever can. Huh? Yeah. Okay. Siddhanta. Thus, the wise perform bhakti, which purifies the mind, atma prasada, prasadanin. Purifies the mind, satisfies it. With the greatest joy, paramaya muda. The performance of bhakti does not give suffering either during sadhana or perfection, as in the case of performing karmas. Right? So if he says, oh, when I'm doing emotional service, I'm suffering so much, that's from the karmas, not from the bhakti. The chanting's not causing that. There's other things that go along with that. Rather, it gives happiness in sadhana and perfection. Thus, the wise perform bhakti at all times, during sadhana and in perfection. Right? So, in the process of elevating, they perform bhakti, and when they attain perfection, they continue. Because otherwise, these others, when you attain the perfection, you give it up. and what and you're not getting the results while you're doing. That means you're doing karma and you are very austere, you're not getting the results of enjoying on the heavenly platform. Right? And when you get to the heavenly platform, you're no longer performing those karmas that got you there. But in bhakti, you're enjoying the devotional process in the while you're advancing, and when you get there, you're enjoying it and still continuing it. So in other words, it's good. You want to do it eternally, so it has to be better. Because karma, no one wants to do it eternally. No one wants to just be enjoying, be working hard. They want to be able to enjoy. But you know, okay, as long as it's 50-50, then they can appreciate it. Like that. Right? That's Maya's trick, that it's 50-50. It's not actually that much. Okay. So then, Jiva Goswami, I have repeatedly examined the original work, which was written by Gopal Bhatta, who greatly pleased Rupa and Sanatana, and found that parts of it, original work, were in order, parts of it were not in order, and parts of it were incomplete. Putting his work in a systematic order, I have written this book. Did he put this at the beginning of each of the sandhagas? He does. Okay. Yeah, just saying that he wrote the original thing. In other words, he gave the essence that's there. But then, if you want to make it more understandable, for especially if there's anarthas or that, or you're dealing with all the obstacles that come up in trying to appreciate and understand and apply it, Jiva Goswami has addressed that. In other words, the essence and that, how it's connecting everything to Krishna and pure bhakti, that remains. But it's just he's made it systematized so you can see the logic that's going on. You know, it's like it's not as much. I mean, for instance, Lord Chaitanya's associate in the Satyabhama, Jagadananda Pandit. In his book, is that Prema Pandit?
Prema Divarta.
Prema Divarta. Okay, that's it. They both start with Prema, because it's Prema, indeed, that's Bhaktivinoda. Prema Divarta. He writes in the beginning, I'm not writing this in any fancy, you know, special order or this or bringing out this. I'm just writing whatever makes me happy. So that's the extreme of that. But he's just saying that these come to mind, that these are really nice things. He wants to bring out the essence that's there in the Bhagavatam, and he puts it all together and gives that. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, that becomes the basis. Then taking that, systematizing it, and expanding it in areas where it will cover all the doubts and make all the connections, that's what Jiva Goswami is doing. So he is a service then for the Goswamis, then has done this.
So
only
Bhakti
Sangha
or all the
Sangha? No, all. The original is called?
Krama Sangha.
No, Bhagavad. It's called Bhagavad Sangha. This is Bhakti Krishna. So then he took that, systematized the whole thing, and then divided it into six. Like that. So all means all, whatever in all these six that originally would have been there in a more concise form in Gopal Bhatta Goswami's Bhagavad Sangha. So, yes.
Is it
correct that the name of the book is Bhagavad Sandhya? That was what he called it. Because he would work with Sanatana Goswami. He would do all the compiling and all that. So he was very familiar. So he would have been pulling out all the verses and that for the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, for Hari Bhakti Vilas, all these kinds of things. So then in doing that, then he would have compiled what he saw as essence of bhakti as taught by Rupa Sanatana and given it in Bhagavad Siddhartha. Then Jiva Goswami, because the Goswamis before him have established everything. What is the citadel of bhakti and everything like that. But then he's coming along and putting up that, making it into organizing it into an organization and putting the walls and everything around it and the defenses. So it's like Rupa Goswami already established the movement of Lord Chaitanya and the line of understanding. But then Jiva Goswami formalizes that into the Vishnu Vaishnava Rajasabha. So just as then, whatever they're giving, then he formalizes it so that it's, does that make sense? So after Rupa Goswami and the Goswamis, he's the next Acharya in the line. So it's not that, you know, the six Goswamis are on one platform and then it's Krishna's Kaviraj. No, it's the five Goswamis and the Jiva Goswami. So he's the sixth, but he's the one that formalized what the others have done. Is that what somebody says? Then Krishna's, then the Goswami. So therefore, he's the one who brought it and made it so it's clear that this is exactly what they're doing, what they're talking about. So he's the next president of the mission. Anucheda 1. In the four previous sandarbhas, relationships, sambandha, were discussed. In those sandarbhas, that supreme principle endowed with the complete eternal supreme bliss was described by the designations Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, which were factors in those relationships. And the highest manifestation was said to be Bhagavan. In relation to that, forms like Vishnu and the Kumaras are discussed. And the highest form of Bhagavan was concluded to be Krishna. Okay, so then that concludes the whole sambandha. So the sambandha jnana is to establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? And everything else is seen in context with him, because sambandha jnana means relationship. But relationship with how? So if Krishna is the Supreme Lord, then all other manifestations of Godhead, all his shaktis, everything like that, are seen in the context of him. Right? Then you get the complete picture. Then you get the full picture. Otherwise, then the tendency will be, it won't be complete. You know, it may be the absolute truth, but it won't be that full manifestation of the absolute truth. Even though it's absolute in itself, then there's that full manifestation. So then you can understand as having established Krishna as the Supreme Person, and which everybody has a relationship with, that is then you've finished, you've actually succeeded in establishing sambandha jnana. Right? And in that you see that it's bhakti and prema are the natural activities and goal of that relationship. Right? But that's what you're establishing in that context. Now that we're going to look at it from the point of avideya, on how within that context of that relationship for developing prema, we're going to understand avideya. You know, and then prayojana, it's when you get to there, and priti, how it relates to in that relationship, applying your activities according to your relationship with Krishna to please him with prema. Does that make sense? There's always an overlap, but it's where the emphasis is.
We already did four,
isn't that? Yep, we've done four. So we have two left.
Did all these years and then already did
what? We did four.
We did number three.
Yes, three, because the first one we did a long time ago.
That's what we did before. That's the first one. Then you had Bhagavat, then you had Paramatma, then you had Krishna. So, three are about establishing Krishna as the absolute truth. The fourth one is establishing the praman by which you understand that. And so then in the same way as praman, the Vedas, up to then Bhagavatam is the pinnacle, same way as then the absolute truth from praman up to Krishna in Vrindavan is the pinnacle. So you see that Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam is what you're trying to get to, and that's with the Bhagavatam. So the highest point being made in the highest literature is Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam, and then in the philosophy you're establishing, then it's the same thing. So naturally, then that's.
I feel that if you start all over again, you go like the first time again.
But that's because Krishna is not a yoga, it's ever fresh.
Yeah, let's put it like karma is the cause of birth from the favorable point of view.
No, but you see, is that it means before you say it seems that may be bewildering, but then when you deal with it again, you'll see, you know, so many things there, and you'll be having gone through the Sandarbhas, the complete, then you'll be thinking about those conclusions all the way through when you're presenting these beginning points, because that's what it's for. You want to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but then the authority for that is Praman. Right? Then you're going to say, it means everything's connected to Him, everything's come from Him, He's in control of everything, like that, and then He, being Bhagavan, is the Lord of rasas, because relationships based on interaction through opulence. Even if you say, oh no, but you know, what about Tapaloka? You know, they don't have anything, no opulence, but they're associated because of renunciation. They have materially nothing, and that's the grounds that they're there. If you don't have nothing, you can't be there. You know, it's just like you go to some clubs and you want to join the club, so they want to see your, you know, all your background stuff and see where you fit in the social standing, and you know, somebody's watching what car you drove up with, and you know, if it fits the thing, you drove up in a Bentley, and you know, you have the good connections, you can be part of the club. But here is the club is you have to walk in and maximum copens or nothing. Then and you can, you know, discuss the you know, the Upanishads, then you're part of the group. So that's how it goes.
Yes. Also through the three Sandarvas, then we saw how the Brahman is an amsha of Bhagavan.
Yes.
Paramatma is Bhagavan who is localized and dealing with the material world.
Mm.
Having understood that, now when we discuss about karma being inclusive in bhakti, it's very easy to comprehend. Mm. Otherwise, still there are lurking doubts because we don't understand Bhagavan as he is. We have our own conception of what Bhagavan is.
Mm.
Yes.
Good. No, but that's why he gave the verse before is that continuous.
Yeah.
What was it? Yeah, 1.2.14. Therefore, with mind dedicated only to bhakti, devoid of karma and jnana, one should constantly hear about, glorify, and meditate upon the Supreme Lord, the Master of the devotees. So that's why, then, in the association of devotees, then you, what is it? Satyatam kirtayanto mam. Yeah. Amazing, huh? I wish I could remember the verse. That I don't know. I just remember that much of the shloka, yes.
Without visible system, because he wanted to hide knowledge from people who are not submissive and who will not approach the spiritual master. And here we can see that Jiva Goswami created a very clear system
for
this knowledge. And,
so you're asking, go ahead, please.
My question is, if, for example, someone is not beyond the secret succession, and if he will just keep
Will he need a teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it means without a teacher. It means Rabindra Sroop was joking that he had mentioned he had seen and heard about that these professors, you know, in Boston, you know, be like Harvard or whatever, any of those big schools or like that, they're down at the pub drinking beer. And they're discussing Sandarbhas. You know, Jiva Goswami says, you know, because they're looking at it grammatically. He's saying this, and so does he mean like this and that? No, no, but if we take the Sanskrit here, they think like this, and it means this and that. And that's what they do for fun while they're drinking their beer. So, they're, you know, what are they? They may catch some of the technical things, no terminologies, no points he's made, but they won't have no idea how that goes together.
Every Calcutta gentleman has all the six Sandarvas in his home.
Yeah.
Any educated person, he will have
what?
Sandarvas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bengalis.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
What's the advantage of being Bengalis?
It has its advantages.
Our intellectuals, they used to have all classes. It was a must.
Yeah, yeah. They have to have all those. Yeah, that's here's. They have all that in the Goswami literature, and when those in Vrindavan, you know, you have all those caste Goswamis. When they go out to preach, they come to Calcutta. They come to Bengal. Because this is where the disciples are. They might go for a special program somewhere else, very specific. But their field is Bengal. Because they're the only ones that know about these things, so therefore they've all heard, they all have, they all, you know. But that's the thing, is that it would be the same as that you have in India, everyone's read Bhagavad Gita, but how many understand it? And understand the Bhagavad Gita? Because until they contact bona fide guru, right? Means even you want to learn the material things, you have to meet someone in that line. Right? You can't just hear from anybody. So then you understand the knowledge as that line gives it. You know? So it's not like, because you could get all the books. It means this year they're using all the books, they're doing all the tests and everything like that. It means here in India you get them. It's whatever Harvard did last year. In the tests and everything, you can get those manuals and all that in India the next year. So that means, and they use that to prepare. Does that make sense? Like, so say they want to go to the business school of the school of business management, you know, and get for the MBA. They see what did they teach and test on last year. And that's available in India, so that all those people who are planning on going, they're studying that before they go. Does that make sense? And even the ones in India, if they're doing an MBA or that, they'll use that as curriculum for it, because it's 1 year behind. Okay. So now if I just take that myself, study the whole thing, and I know it frontwards and backwards, do I have an MBA? No. It has to be recognized. Because it has to come in that line. You know, or let's take another. But I speculate on what it is and have my own theory of what is there. That actually, the MBA course is actually a hidden agenda on some kind of conspiracy theory, while the aliens are trying to take over the world and all that, and they're trying to, using economics as the bait to catch all the people before they come and take them all away. Right? You know, once you get to a particular level, like, means there's this discussion. See, it's not, if someone said, hey, Elon Musk is gone, and then someone said, oh, he went to Mars, no one's going to get too upset, right? But they'll go, wow, really? Like that. So therefore, then you see is that the aliens have already gotten to position, so you don't even know if the Elon Musk that you see is actually really him, or if he's a fake one, because they've already taken him to, Mars. I don't know. Maybe they use them as batteries or something. That's what some use like that. Right? He thinks more, so there's more activity, so there's more electric current and all that. So. No, isn't that how it works? So I'm saying it comes up so many kinds of things, and then I become an authority on that, and I'm giving lectures about all around the world and all that. But will I be counted as an academic? No. Right? So even in the material things, you're a doctor, you know all the things, your parents are doctors, you know everything, you read all the books since you're a kid, you know, you can pass any test that they have, but are you a doctor? No, until they've confirmed it. So the same way is, therefore, then, when you approach bona fide guru in the parampara, then it's revealed. Because in the others, it's just, you have the capacity to memorize, but here, it's revealed by Krishna, because he's independent. Sanji reveals. So, no, they can't. And much of the time, if they've already studied these things, then they'll have a million arguments. Well, if they've never touched it, and they, as it appears from a devotee, then it'll go smoothly. Just like that, Prabhupada gives the example of that school in Vienna. It's a big music school. You come to the school, and you've never practiced music, then there's one fee. If you've already been learning for a few years and you come to their school, they charge a higher fee for the same school. And you could ask, well, why are they charging more? Because we have to put in the effort to get you to unlearn all the nonsense you learn. So in other words, someone who knows, I don't know if you saw before, when you have somebody like we had a devotee before from a Shankarite background. When it comes to when we were dealing with Bhagavad Sandarbha, he's arguing like anything. He's like, see, they say it's all one and like that, yeah, see, right, like that, and you have to, no. And after some years of that, then slowly, then, you know, he started to come, you see, you know, the mind is clear, and then he's very focused on that. He was a devotee, but I'm just saying he has all that baggage from before. You know, so whatever it is, that's always going to be something that has to be removed. So it's not necessarily an advantage. If someone was sincerely trying to know they read to it, and then they come in contact with the devotees and they're sincerely trying to do, then they are familiar with it. And so then that can have an advantage for them, but it's not prerequisite. So that makes sense. You know, if they got Bhagavad Gita as it is, so they're hearing from Prabhupada, that's one problem. So it'll be better. But if they got someone else's Gita, then... Okay. In enumerating the powers of Paramatma, the jivas, forms of the Tathasta Shakti, whose unchanging nature is consciousness, were described. The jiva's essential knowledge is covered by Maya, by the misfortune of being opposed to the Lord, which means that the jiva has, without beginning, samsarga bhavaha, possessed no knowledge of the beginningless supreme entity. Footnote 1. Samsarga bhava has three categories. There is atyanta bhava, which means absolute non-existence, not ever existing in past, present, or future. Though they're talking. They didn't exist, why are they talking? There is pradvamshabhava, absence of destruction, which describes something which existed but was then destroyed. Absence of destruction? Oh, absence by destruction. Okay. Which existed but was then destroyed. And there is pragabhava, previous non-existence, which describes something which did not exist but appears at a later time. Of these, jiva's non-existence of knowledge of the Lord is not antyata bhava, since a jiva can attain a knowledge at some point in time. It is not pradvamsha bhava, since if the jiva had knowledge of the Lord, it could not be destroyed. A nitya siddha cannot have this knowledge of the Lord destroyed. Even a sadhana siddha cannot have this knowledge destroyed. It is stated in Preeti Sandarbha that knowledge of the Lord, if established in the jiva, should be eternal. The destruction of ignorance concerning Atma is eternal. Because that knowledge which destroys the ignorance is a manifestation of the supreme entity's nature of self-revelation. The absolute destruction of suffering is eternal because that ignorance existed but was destroyed. It is pradvamsha bhava, ignorance. Is it pradvamsha, ignorance? Preeti Sandarbha Anucheda 1. It is argued that the knowledge is simply unmanifested but still present in the jiva. Then it is not classified as abhava at all. The jiva's lack of knowledge is thus pragabhava, among the forms of samsargabhava, not having previously existed in the jiva. This does not exclude the possibility of attaining knowledge of the Lord in the future, which on attainment becomes the eternal possession of the jiva. So it's a natural position to know. But they don't know, because we're talking about knowing meaning you actually understand in relationship with the Lord. So even though you mentioned they're not nityasiddha, because we're talking about nityasiddha means they're on that, eternally on that platform. Right? Having gone back to that platform. But Prabhupada mentions, according from the Acharyas, that the jiva in his preliminary state, then is nityasiddha, means that they're not conditioned from that angle, but not nityasiddha by they know the Lord. Right? You know, just like there's different levels of you how you say, like the Kanishka doesn't know anything so much about the Lord or knowing like that, the Madhyama knows more, but then the Uttama knows is situated nicely. So we're talking about that. It would be a neophyte position. It's a nitya siddha, but they don't, and because of that, then they can become attracted by material energy, since they're tatasta, that's their nature. But once you come to that supreme position, then why would you make a mistake? Right? It's not about variety. It's not like here, where therefore everything's going nice, so you have to create a not nice situation for it to become nice again, because becoming nice is really good, and then being nice for a while is good, but then it gets boring. So therefore you create an unnice situation so that you can re-again make it nice. Right? But in the spiritual platform, they're doing that within the spiritual. They don't have to go back to material to. You know what I'm saying? Bhakti is complete in itself. It doesn't require mundane dissatisfaction for them. It's just another between Sambho and Vipalamba. The jiva consequently believes he is made of dull matter composed of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Okay. Thus it is said in the 11th canto, those who do not know Paramatma, who are fixed in goals other than me, engage in arguments concerning the reality or unreality of the world, and do not cease to argue. Though they achieve no results, they have their thoughts turned away from me, the Lord who gives regard only to the devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22-34. So they'll always argue. They can't not argue because they haven't turned to the Lord. There's no solution to their problem. So they must argue. It becomes their identity. The world's false, no, it's real, or it's this and that, or anything. So they just argue over that incessantly because they have no other identity, no other knowledge. So only when the mind comes in contact with the Lord, then there is actually satisfaction. Right? Does that make sense? Uddhriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Learned persons who can destroy doubts can certainly determine the truth. End quote. So this is, that will be the, yeah. He said, doubt of the other person. No, they simply quarrel among themselves. Some maintain with proof that the world is real. Some proclaim that the world is false, attacking the first claim. They show a lack of knowledge of Paramatma, because Paramatma, understood only by realization, is beyond logical argument. A person fixed in a goal other than me, or a person who is fixed in defeating others' arguments, achieves no result, such as piety, sin, svarga, or hell. Though it is pointless, that person does not stop arguing. This is because of his nature arising from Maya. I offer respects to the great Lord of eternal qualities, whose material energy is the cause of agreement and disagreement among them, those who make philosophies, and then argue with others, whose material nature continually bewilders them as to the real nature of Atma. 6.4.31.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shalom Prabhupada.